Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. There are many, many ways to build revenue, to build growth, to create relationships at and around your business. And one of the more popular ways to do that is through partnerships. Now, on the surface, this sounds easy. In reality, it is not. Why? Because there's a whole lot of people you can partner with, some better than others. There's a whole lot of different stuff to consider, to look out for, all of that. So in order to make your life easier, we're going to talk about that today. And before I introduce my guests, I want to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. With me today, I've got Mark Brigman, and Mark is the CEO of Partnernomics. You can find a link to Partnernomics.com in the show notes. It is an amazing name for, and also the name of today's episode. So much to talk about. Now, Mark's an author, a speaker, and a founder. He's done a lot of different stuff. And before we get into letting him tell us about that, Mark, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more about the Partnernomics. And you know, I often say no one tells a story better than the founder themselves. So let me just go ahead and ask, what's your backstory?
So I guess the backstory, I'm going to go back a little ways, but be quick with it. But I'm the product of two lifelong business owners. And so I was probably literally in high school before I realized that most people work for somebody else, because both of my parents were self-employed and I got to see them grow their businesses as I grew up. So I knew that eventually I was going to own my own business. But you know, I went to college, went to University of Central Missouri, took my first class in economics and absolutely fell in love. And 6 years later, I got a bachelor's and master's in econ. I started my career at Sprint, like a lot of other people in Kansas City, and was really lucky to find this world of strategic partnering and biz dev very early in my career, and had the opportunity to make these crazy smartphones do all the things that they do today. And it was a really cool experience to learn the art and science of partnering.
So, well, let's, you know, as I mentioned in the intro to the show, I mean, partnership can come in a lot of different forms. I mean, partnership to many people is the relationship you have with who you own your business or your enterprise with. So maybe we could start by defining the difference between that type of partnership and the partnership kind of type of partnership that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. And even when I talk with partnering professionals that have been doing this partnering thing for decades, this is where we start. And so the way that I describe it is partnering falls on a continuum. And on one side, we have what we call very transactional partnerships. And that's sales, procurement, supply chain management, vendor management, those sorts of things, where it's more kind of commodity based. There's not a lot of differentiation, and it can be kind of very fast cycle, right? And on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have partnerships or relationships that are put together that include a lot of innovation, a lot of risk. There's not a script. There's not a recipe. We're trying to create that paradigm shift. We're trying to create that competitive advantage for at least one organization. And in those cases, that truly is the strategic side of partnering. And then obviously there's everything in between. And so whenever we talk about partnerships, we're talking about third-party entity partnerships. So it's organization A partnering with organization B and or CDF. And it can be everything from not-for-profit to churches to, you know, all the way to the Fortune 10s.
Okay. So then overall, I mean, the main reason that in business that we create partnerships is to, well, maybe for lack of a better term, is to take advantage of the other partner's strengths. And sometimes those are things like, well, access to customers, or often the partnership itself is the customer. So what are the more common forms that we see, or like how do these look coming down the highway on the way to my bank account?
Yeah. So let me just kind of paint this picture real quick first. And you definitely hit it. There's to kind of simplify how partnerships play into the strategy. There's three different lanes or three different ways that we can grow our business. Organic, right? We're going to build it ourselves. There's acquisition. We're going to get out the checkbook and we're going to buy resources, or we're going to buy a company. And then the third way is through partnering. And that's where we're going to team up and essentially kind of borrow. And so in partnering, we say that there's five different types of partnerships. The first being like an alliance. And so that's like a co-marketing, co-branding. I'm going to set my brand next to yours, and it's going to help give each of us access to each other's customers. And typically that's the lowest level of commitment. The second type of partnership is referral partnership. All right. So I'm going to find somebody, or I'm going to come across somebody that'll be interested in you or potentially interested in your solution. And I'm going to be the matchmaker. I'm going to hand them over to you. The third type of partnership is a channel partnership, like a channel sales partnership, for example. And so in that case, it's a sales partnership, but it's more involved. And so in this case, I'm not only going to find the customer, I'm going to sell them. And then I'm also going to do some level of implementation with them as well, right? So just like we can walk into Best Buy today and we can walk out with a Verizon phone. Well, how does that happen? Well, it's through a channel partnership or channel relationship. The fourth type is a technology or an integrated partnership. And so this is very common with software companies, for example, but it's kind of the Intel inside. It's where we're putting another company's solution inside of our solution and bundling that. Then the fifth and final is what we call a resource partnership or a capital partnership. And that's just simply where we leverage a resource from another organization. But instead of the typical, hey, I'll pay you $1,000 a month or $1 million a month, the payment is predicated on the success of the relationship.
So, you know, some of the things you talk about, I mean, referral partnerships, that's often just like, hey, I'll refer you some business. That's not always like a contract kind of thing. Now, channel partners are interesting and tricky relationships to build. You know, I see a crossover. So for those of you that have ever done like a one-click install, something like that, like that's almost like a hybrid mix between technology and channel partnerships. Now, in my basic overview of, I have always called those sales channel partners. The big benefit of that stuff is a lot of the actual person that's the partner, like wherever you're doing that quote one click install, it gives them an extra product to sell, or they have some kind of additional monetization. And then for the provider of said whatever, it's an amazing chance to get right in front of the people that you want to get in front of. And I think overall, like, with any of these things, it's about, you know, oftentimes the general public grossly underestimates the overall cost of acquiring a customer or a client. And in some industries, especially software as a service or certain types of tech where they are, and I'm doing air quotes here, where things are sticky, the value of the lifetime value of these clients is really, really high. And often, you know, the cost of acquiring the CAC, C-A-C, is high. And, you know, so are those the main reasons the most obvious reasons that those type of relationships develop and bloom?
Yeah, definitely the referral partnerships and the channel partnerships. Those are generally seen as sales types of partnerships. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It is so difficult, especially as a startup, to build a brand. It's so costly to build a brand, and that's, you know, people buy what they know, like, and trust. Well, it takes money. It takes a lot of time to build that brand so that it is known, it is liked, it is trusted. And so, yeah, we definitely want to be able to leverage the power of brands and leverage the power of networks of other folks to speed that, you know, to accelerate that sales process to get us the revenue. So, absolutely. Lots of partnerships are put in place to help accelerate that.
Well, you had mentioned that, and sometimes, you know, companies acquire other companies. So I'll give everyone a real life example of pursuing this. So, you know, Fullscale, who's the presenter, and this episode's powered by Fullscale, is the parent company that owns multiple things that my business partner, Matt Watson, and I do, one of which is gigabook.com. Now, at one point, I pursued Paychex, like the payroll company, about trying to have a sales channel partnership or possibly even acquiring Gigabook. Why? Because they were already doing business with, like, they have like 700,000 small business clients, and the ability to reach them, like, I mean, because they email them, they contact them, they have sales reps, like, theoretically adding a booking or a scheduling product on could just be a checkbox somewhere. They already collect money from these people regularly, all that. So in that kind of situation, if only 1% of that entire user base or client base converted into a paying customer, it's significant. You know, like, I mean, that would be hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue, you know, quickly. And, you know, for those that haven't built or rolled out products, it really is. They don't just line up at the door and beat it down and say, hey, man, I really want to use this. So how can I hurry up and do that faster? So that access to the growth is really important. Now, another thing that I've seen popping up a lot is the resource partnership. And we've even done episodes recently related to some of the things that Launch KC does, or different things where you're finding a lot of corporate entities, they want to invest in the downstream of technology that fits well with what they do. And, you know, so they're putting resources into developing specific things. You know, how are you seeing that evolve for business owners?
Yeah, it's been really fascinating. So you have like NBKC, for example, where they have their incubator and they pull in fintech companies with the hopes of, you know, one or two of them will flourish and they will be able to, you know, to have some pull through on that. And so giving them not only some real estate to work with, but also a test bed and a lot of different experts, industry experts in the financial technology space, to help them grow their products out. It's really been fascinating to see more of that. You know, as we think about the different resources that some organizations have, whether it's real estate or it's access to knowledge and just some executives with some really strong, you know, backgrounds and connections, networks, those are high valued for startups, but really come at a low cost for a lot of companies. And so why not do that? You know, for startups, a lot of times it's not necessarily the money that they need as much as it is the connections, which brings sales. And so companies,
and that's you're exact on that, because we've done interview or shows with so many of the people that came through it, more Launch KC specifically, where that accelerator finds a top level partner and they make a small investment in five or six different companies. And, you know, I've talked to all the founders on or off the show, because Full Scale is also, we give them some level of service credit, and I ask them all. I said, well, were you after the money or were you after the relationship? And it's 100%. They say the relationship, because in those particular
brings
those,
the money.
It does.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
And here's another, but it doesn't hurt to, even on a small level, to have that top level partner that has a vested interest in your success. Which is actually one of the reasons that some of these, that certain partner relationships and channel relationships don't pan out the way that they could or should.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You hit the nail on the head with that one, Matt. And I remember, to share a quick story. So it was, it was probably 5-6 years into my career at Sprint, and, was leading, a high profile, teaming project. And, you know, yet another reorg came through, and we were always taught, and we just philosophically believed, that if your partner can't make money, there's no such thing as a one-sided partnership. If your partner cannot make money, I promise you that partnership will not work for you. But this new VP and his infinite wisdom, he was all about squeezing every ounce of pennies that we could get for the Sprint side. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, that there wasn't enough money to go around. And just because we were quote unquote so good at putting these deals in place, it ended up being the demise of a couple different products, because you know your partners, you have to ensure their existence and their welfare as well. And that is definitely one solid takeaway that I want to impress upon people. Is as you're setting up partnerships, that is definitely one of the to-dos, one of the must-haves.
Yeah, and I want to get a little deeper into that, because you know, here you are, you're an early stage company, and all of a sudden you see this big company, and they have an interest in being a channel partner, or doing something with you, and it feels huge. And the thing is, it can very easily now, maybe that it's possible it could be your big break. And then oftentimes it's not. And, you know, Matt Watson on several shows with me, we've talked about that, because, and I don't know the company, but, you know, Matt was the founder of Vend Solutions, which saw a huge exit in 2012. And early in their life cycle, they had the opportunity to partner with air quotes again here, big company. And it didn't turn out being what they wanted it to be. And I've been down the same road. I ran into that with Gigabook early a couple times, where you have limited bandwidth and resources, especially in the early stages. And if you shift everything to focus on, you know, a channel or a technology partnership is not just as easy as like going, okay, cool, let's do it. I mean, in many situations, it involves integration of things, and you got to build stuff in. There's a lot of paperwork. And then the reason that, you know, that I've kind of realized that sometimes the partnernomics don't work out is, well, keep in mind, whoever you're partnering with, your business is not what they do full time. So exactly, they're not necessarily focused on making your life awesome. You're just like this little, just a passenger on so much of that. So, you know, I think a lot of people get into these partner relationships and think it's going to change everything. And I mean, they do end up disappointed. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't pursue them. You absolutely should. But you do, I do think it's important that you try to gauge your opportunity cost, meaning the value of whatever it is that you're choosing not to do, to focus on that. Because, I mean, do you find that a lot of people tell you the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you're talking about just because, you know, you get a deal with a whomever, a Microsoft, a Google, a whoever, whatever space you're in, just because they are strategic to you, doesn't mean you are strategic to them. And as a matter of fact, you're probably not. That's where the word vendor comes in. They just typically will see you as another vendor. I'd love to give out a plug here for my buddy Bernie Brenner. So Bernie is one of the founders of TrueCar, right? The way car buying should be. It grew into a multi-billion dollar company. But he wrote a book called The Sumo Advantage. And so if you're a small company, a relatively small company, and you're wanting to partner with a sumo, you're wanting to partner with a big company, his book is full of some solid insights as to how you do that. And the thing that you don't want to do is sell your soul. You want to make sure and go into it absolutely smart and absolutely eyes wide open. And just know that they are playing a different game than what you are playing.
You actually have a really good point. And that's like kind of an ancillary piece of the, you know, what I was saying. And so sometimes things do go well. And I've had conversations with multiple people that, they didn't really think it out. And now all of a sudden they've got this huge flood of business that's coming in, often at a pretty steep discount. And it sucks up the ability to deal with and handle other things.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about, we're going to drop the price and then make it up on volume. But if you're doing five times the work and getting one fifth the revenue, it gets exhausting really, really quickly. But I can also say, even the flip side, whenever I was at Sprint, we killed a lot of companies. And what do I mean by that? We had partners. We had companies that came in and provided solutions to us. And then we in turn packaged those up and sold them out to our tens of millions of subscribers. And frankly, it was too much work. The elephant was too big to eat and the company just simply couldn't keep up. So you definitely have to go into partnerships with large companies. This topic, you've got to go into it with eyes wide open and make sure, as attractive as it seems, make sure that you set up the financials so that they will work, that they truly will work. Don't give up the farm.
What other advice do you have when it comes to looking out for, like I said, these things can go really well and they really can't. Now, the term partneronomics, as far as the economics of partnership, there's the thing is it's difficult to view it with a crystal ball. Like one of the things that I ran into early trying to create channel partnerships was, we were like a company of four people, and you look at this big companies, they don't want to embarrass themselves. They don't want you to fail financially. So you talk about the finances, it goes well past the economics of revenue. It's also like, are you going to be around? And then another thing is the support. And it's difficult so we'll just say Acme Corp. So we don't have to quote businesses in a poor context like Google or whoever, but because, they do good business, but at Acme Corp, they might be, they're sitting there going, well, if we push 10,000 users, how's this four person company going to scale to a point or be able to handle any of this? Or are they even going to be there? So, what are some of the other things to look out for or consider that are painfully obvious, but maybe not?
Yeah, some of the key things is, some people talk about when is the right time to use a partnership, and I think it's the wrong way to ask the question. The real question is, what is your business? What is your business model? What is your plan? What are you trying to accomplish? And as you think about how you are going to grow your business, you have three different levers to pull, and they're not mutually exclusive, right? You can pull multiple levers, but it's organic. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to build it ourselves. It's acquisition. We're going to get out the checkbook. And obviously that's challenging for a lot of small companies. Or the third way is partnering, or we're going to do a combination of those. And so partnering just becomes, and it should be, a very intentional tool. But it's done because it's just the most efficient route to get whatever it is that you want to accomplish. And so that's really where it starts. So if and when we decide to go down this partnering route, what is step one? Well, step one is getting really clear on what your partnering plan is. And so, don't let your business run you. You have to run your business and you have to have a very specific plan. And so that's a part of what Partnernomics is. It's a full framework of how to do this partnering thing, right? It's the art and science of developing successful strategic partnerships. So it starts off by having a very specific plan. So internal to your company and all of those stakeholders, you know exactly what the initiative is, who the players are, and how you're defining success, what those goals are. Another thing that I'll share is, so many people, whenever they look at a failed partnership, they start their analysis by looking at, okay, here's the date the deal was signed. Now, what happened after that to make the deal fall apart or not work? When the fact of the matter is, it could have been predicted far before the deal was ever signed. One of the core mistakes made by a lot of folks is not looking at alignment, not doing the courting or dating phase, and we just immediately go to marriage. And that's really what we try to impress upon people and also give them a framework of how does that evaluation look like? How do we vet and evaluate and perform due diligence with partners so that we're truly maximizing our opportunity for success?
What kind of advice do you have for doing that properly?
So, it starts with truly understanding what is the purpose, the vision, the mission of your organization. What are you trying to accomplish? And what does the next 5 to 10 years look like for you? And then whoever you're seeking to partner with, we call them partner candidates, but whoever the candidates are that you may partner with, you have to make sure that their own mission, vision, their purpose, the direction that they're going, they have to have intersections. They have to be congruent. They have to be complementary. We share the word picture of if we're in Los Angeles and we're partnering up and one of us wants to go to New York and the other one wants to go to Florida, somewhere by the time we hit the Midwest, at least one of us is going to be mad because we're not heading in the direction that we want. And so you have to ensure on the very front end, right? It starts with having term sheets and very explicit term sheets. We have an 8-component term sheet that talks about what is our culture? What is the language that we use and speak with? What are the goals that we have for this relationship? What do the economics look like? Is there intellectual property that's going to be born or potentially born out of this relationship? Who owns it? Who gets licensing, right? You have to put all of these questions on the table on the front end and address them on the front end, as opposed to doing it downstream after, you know, you're already married and going down this route with each other, because that's when things can get contentious.
Yeah, you know, some of that, you know, there's a lot of different things that can come up. And there, you know, some of these things that feel inherently negative or like they're working against you can sometimes be swung in your favor in an early stage business. I've actually, had discussions with people that, all right, so you have a bigger company that wants to do business with your smaller company. They're concerned about your resource capacity. But they're a believer enough in what you're doing that they'll make a significant prepayment or something like that, just to therefore guarantee that you do in fact have the resources or ability to grow, which is like a double tap in the plus column when it comes to getting funded. A, you may get the investment capital that you need or looking for, and you then have a powerful partner as well. Now that requires a little more, you know, legwork and stuff like that. But that's also, in my opinion, a pretty healthy signal that who you're partnered with has a vested interest, or they're planning on doing something with it. Now, on the flip side of that, there's some things that you can open up, and, you know, there's 300 things in there. And I think those are the ones you look out for a little more, because you're just a different, well, you use the term vendor. You're just another booth in the marketplace at that point, and you're not necessarily standing out. How important do you think it is to look at or get into how many different vendors/partners your future partner has?
Yeah, it's vitally important. Obviously, the fewer choices your quote unquote, air quotes, your partner has, you know, the more strategic you become. If you're one of 10, if you're one of 50, we call those a commodity. And yeah. we're going to throw 50 hooks out in the water, and whichever three or four grab a fish, those are the ones that we're going to run with. You know, I mean, that's how companies will play that, the numbers game. But it all just comes down to your solution, you know, whatever that may be and how unique it is, your value proposition, all of those great things, you know, that we know about in business. But we want to, our objective should be to be highly strategic to our partners. The more strategic we are, the more value that we bring, which gives us power. And that's obviously very critical. But Matt, you bring up a great point that I love, and that is, you know, whenever you look at the fastest growing top 20, top 50 companies over the last decade, I mean, how many of those companies were born out of a Fortune 500? Basically zero of them. Small companies, these small innovative startups, they are absolutely needed. It's vital for them. You know, they are vital to the growth of larger organizations. I mean, I think today, now more than ever, small companies have opportunities to partner with large companies and be wildly successful. I had a chance to do a workshop at Andreessen Horowitz, right? A16Z, one of the top venture capital firms on the planet. And it was really interesting just to learn from those 70 companies that were represented there as to what their solutions are and how many of them are getting some great airtime from, you know, from large brands now. But it's just because they're so innovative.
Yeah, so I think, you know, here we are 30 minutes into this conversation, and I'm going to be honest, we haven't even talked about the hardest part about any of this yet, which is actually finding the partner. So, you know, we went through a lot of do's and don'ts and things that can be great and things that are not and things to look out for. But the reality is, in many cases, these relationships are very difficult to find. Like, I actually know people that specialize in just this, like consultants that come in and help you. Well, either they have connections already, or they help you create the strategy, the plan. You know, some of that is kind of what you do on many levels as well, because these are non-standard relationships. And the thing is you know, well, another thing too is you can spend a lot of time trying to establish, nurture, and create these relationships. Like, they don't usually happen very quickly. So, I mean, let's kind of take that back to square one. Like, how do you go about even finding possible, you know, partners on, I mean, I think referral partners is pretty easy because that exists on so many different levels, you know, and that's kind of a word of mouth thing on a lot of days. Like, your own clients and users and customers can often be your referral partners in that regard. Like, at Full Scale, we actually incentivize our existing clients. We'll give them a $2,000 invoice credit if they refer someone. Half the time, they don't even care. They just like, they're just happy to like to help someone else solve a problem. So, but with channel technology and resource partners, the level of complexity, especially when they get intermingled, the difficulty level increases sharply. So how do you go about finding them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so as you had mentioned, in partnerships, you have this continuum, and on one side, you might have referral partnerships where it's just spray and pray. And if they give us results, awesome. On the other end of the spectrum, we truly have some strategic partners where if they fail, it means we're failing. And so we have to make sure that we are successful. If you're doing it right, you are spending a pretty significant amount of time on the front end doing this searching, doing the vetting, doing the evaluation. But we have some different tools that we've developed that is essentially like a match.com. or an eHarmony.com, if you will. And it kind of walks people through a process to evaluate the fit. And again, it's the damage that's done by bypassing or accelerating through this process and just saying, hey, company X has this strong brand in a certain space that we want in banking, for example. So we've got to have a partnership with X. Well, that's a very dangerous approach, because a lot of what determines success is really culture, and it's how well we get along and how well we complement each other's strategy of where we're trying to take our businesses. And we need to spend that time on the front end. You know, successful partnerships are really built on the front end, which is like one of my buddies that does a lot of real estate investment. He said, "Mark, we make money whenever we buy the house, not when we sell it. We make it whenever we buy it right, just because we know what we're getting and it has value in it from the beginning." Same is true with partnerships. You make your money on the front end by getting alignment.
Yeah, they say the same thing about hiring. Like, you basically want to, when you hire employees, like, you win or lose, like, they're at the point of hire. Because if you do it poorly and you don't know what you're looking for, whatever. Now, you mentioned we, and you said we have some tools. Let's talk about that for a second, because you offer partnering courses, personalized coaching, and you also have a weekly Partnernomics podcast. You want to let everyone know, like, what kind of help you offer in case that's something they want to reach out about?
Sure. Yeah. Partnernomics, essentially our business, I say that our building has two different wings. One wing of it is a learning management system. So we literally have clients from all over the world. I was on a Zoom call with a client a couple of days ago from Ukraine. And so we have three different courses, each course being 6 weeks long, that people can come onto our platform and take it as a do-it-yourselfer approach. Or we will coach them through those courses to help them implement the methodology within their business. And then the second wing of our organization is an online community of partnering professionals and business growth professionals. And so it's essentially like the LinkedIn for strategic partnering, if you will. So folks can come on actually for free and create an account, jump into some different forums, some groups, jump into some different chats, some different discussions, and talk about challenges or opportunities they have. Negotiating deals. How do I evaluate a good partner? I'm wanting to do a technology partnership. Those sorts of things. They can have an opportunity to jump in and have those conversations.
Yeah, and this is a field of expertise that I highly recommend, that if you want to seek this stuff. And, you know, I mentioned knowing a few people that do stuff like this because I went out to seek experts, because, you know, I want to get back into the finding partners, because, you know, here I am. This is probably 3 years ago at this point, and I'm out there looking for stuff. Now, some of the stuff, the sophistication and ease of access has grown up a little bit. 3 years ago, and 3 years ago doesn't sound like a long time ago, but the way that technology, especially the software as a service industry, has continued to grow and progress, 3 years is a lifetime. And
that's amazing.
You know, so you sit down as a software company, you start to look out and you're like, well, who could I partner with? You realize pretty quickly it's a monster list. And, you know, I mean, because it's so many, you know, I mentioned, you know, like, you know, chasing paychecks, the payroll company. Well, here's the thing. There's literally, like, they're not the only payroll company. There's like hundreds of them, you know, and then you have, you know, just, I mean, it just really, it becomes overwhelming in a hurry. And that's back to that early stage company issue of limited resources. Where do we put our bandwidth? Where do we put our efforts? And, you know, like, I mean, I went down the rabbit hole a couple times where I shouldn't have gone. And, you know, just shit didn't pan out. Some of it was because we didn't know what we were doing. Some of it because they weren't the right partners. And I had to learn a few things along the way, because there are people out there that'll kind of tease you along and they have a different agenda than actual partnership. Like, they might be trying to answer different questions, you know, about what the effectiveness is of this or that or whatever. And, you know, you end up sucking up a lot of time, effort, and energy, or the timeline of it just takes forever to develop. It's like, imagine sports. If, you know, we're Chiefs fans here in Kansas City, if it took Patrick Mahomes 90 seconds to throw a pass, you'd be like, oh my God, what's going on here? Well, if it takes months or like a year to develop, like, I mean, that's a lot of time, effort, and energy. That isn't exactly like a fast moving thing. So, you know, and with that, like, What are a couple, I love talking about the don'ts of this. Like, what are a couple of things that you, that we would, or anyone could hear from a potential partner that should be a red flag?
Yeah. So Matt, you brought up a great point, and I'll just quote one of my buddies and now a mentor, a business mentor, Kyle Malott. So Kyle was the COO of DST Systems, the financial side of their business. And he's been an awesome mentor of mine. But he's gone through all of our content. As a matter of fact, he's one of our coaches. And he said, you know, one of the greatest things that he sees out of the Partnernomics methodology is the speed to get to know. You know, so it's not just about how can we get to yes, right? That's what sales is about. How do we get to yes? But in partnering, you've got to accelerate the speed to a decision and basically expect to get to a no most of the time. You should get to know most of the time just because the importance of the fit is so crucial. That's what it's all about. And so, you know, it's about spending the time and investing the time, but there's a lot of tools that can be used. Like I mentioned, a term sheet on the front end. I mean, how do you have very candid and direct conversations of what you want, what you expect out of relationship, and what you are willing to offer as value to that partner? And how can you quickly get to the ground floor of uncovering what that is? And really, it's great communication skills. It's asking the right questions and just setting stuff on the table. You know, a lot of times whenever we're doing this business partnership things, we can be a little coy and be a little reserved. I mean, if you just think about negotiating different contracts or negotiating terms, we tend to kind of hoard things and hide them under our shirt when, in fact, we should basically be the opposite. We should set things out on the table. Here's what I want. Here's what I expect. Here's what I need. Here's what I can offer. And you lay it out there and help your counterpart, help your, what we call a partner candidate, help the candidate see the value and help them share, articulate what the value is that they can provide to you. That's one of the biggest things that I see that falls apart is people cannot effectively articulate the value propositions.
Yeah, so I offer advice on that regularly because people have a tendency to focus on features, and people don't buy features, they buy benefits. By the benefits of what the features do, features, advantages, and then benefits. So if you find yourself talking about features, and features of a partnership deal are like, hey, we can do this, we can do that. Who cares? We get it. That should be easily explained. It's on the homepage of your website, you know, and like, you know, so, but the thing is, and basically what Mark's alluding to here as well is, you know, like if there's certain things that you require, need, or have to have and part of a deal, get them out there. Cause if you waste a whole bunch of time, effort, energy, emotion, all of that on there's certain deal breakers that are going to kill things, like get them out there. Now, as I have grown and evolved as a business person and an entrepreneur, I have become painfully transparent. Like you talk about the benefits, like, I mean, cause the people that I'm out there wanting to do business with, partner with, or any of that, well, they're sophisticated. They're going to figure out anyway. So like I have this, like I'm really, and the advice I'd offer, like especially people that are pitching for business or investment or whatever, trying to get into like tech stars or something, like you're dealing with a high class of person here that has been down this road many times. So just tell them like here's the good, here's the bad. This is where we're at. This is what I need. This is what I hope to achieve. And like you said, the faster there's that buzz term fail fast that was floating around the valley and other places. The reason that you want to fail fast is because you get to say next and move on to the next thing that you might not fail at. Like if you spend forever failing every single time, like you're going to be wrapped up in that process a lot. So the faster you get to know, you know, there's only two four-letter words that I care about when it comes to sales. And one of them does not start with an F. It's sold and next, you know? So like, you know, you're either selling something or the word next to move along. And you know, there's levels of, if you talk about communication, well, good communication in these regards is like our salespeople or business people in general begin to sense friction or not, you know, like, and those, you know, we talked about red flags. Like that's one of the things, like if the entity you want to partner with is a pain in the ass before the agreement, you should not expect anything other than that after. There's no reason to believe it'll probably get worse. And, absolutely. You know, so those are some different things. And like, so, I mean, really in the end, like, and you know, Mark's right. And it's saying get to know quickly, because when you get out there and you look at all the number of partnerships, if you don't get to know quickly, you're not going to get very far down the road.
Yeah, time is not your friend, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that rapid fire approach, though, and you know, and here's the thing: is like if people are slow getting back to you, like all of that, like you use the term dating when it comes to this. Well, it's the same thing. That's why you date people before you marry them, because you want to know if they're batshit crazy or if there's something else or whatever. And you shouldn't, like, I mean, I don't know. I know people that got married. I'm like, what did you expect to change? You know, like, you know, and so with that, much like a marriage, a partnership is often difficult to annul. If you know, and I always say, it's like, it's easier to get rid. It is literally easier to get rid of your spouse than it is to get rid of your business partner. Like, and it is true. Like it can occur faster with less everything. So, you know, much like choosing the business partner, choose, like, examine that with partner. Now, so we're about at the end of this episode here. And you know, I end my episodes with the founders freestyle. Now, before we get into that, today's episode was brought to you by fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Find a link in the show notes. You can also find the link to Partnernomics. Mark's written books, given speeches. He does a lot of different stuff. Yeah. Does a lot of things, you know, through his site, has his own podcasts. You know, it's got a lot of information to offer related to this. And these are, once again, this is a course that many of us have not charted and sailed effectively, because it's a little more evolved when it comes to business building. Now, with that, in conclusion here, what's some of the best advice that you could give to startup founders when it comes to all this? I know that's a broad loaded question, but you know, what's a quick, you know, three pack of anything that are kind of your cardinal rules?
Yeah. So, you know, I love what you were saying, Matt, about, you know, going after the paychecks company. It's just like in dating, you want the chick or the guy to dig you. And you know, whenever you're forming partnerships, the more strategic they are to you, the more strategic, you know, you could be to them. I mean, if you are truly strategic to each other, that's going to significantly improve the likelihood of success. But at the end of the day, you know, companies don't do business with companies. People do business with people. And so it all comes down to people. It all comes down to relationships. You know, we have something that we've created called the Partnership Success Pyramid. It's the five imperatives for partnership success. Well, what is that? First, the foundational piece is trust. You've got to build trust or you have nothing else. Figure out how to build trust. Second is alignment. You have to have an alignment of, you know, what are you looking to achieve? What are you looking to accomplish? And how do you do that together? Third is transparency, clear, honest, and timely communications. And all of these go back to continue to build trust. The fourth is what we call esprit de corps. And so what is esprit de corps? It's the highest level of commitment that there is. And so it has to be a high level of commitment, especially if it's truly a strategic partnership. That means that it includes innovation. You're trying to create this paradigm shift. You're trying to achieve that exponential growth. No one else has done it before. It's going to be a pain in the ass. You're going to get punched in the mouth. If you're willing to turn around and walk away the first time that something gets tough, don't ever get started, because that's what the world of strategic partnering is all about. And then the fifth and final imperative is results. You got to kick ass. You got to get the results for both parties. And one of the things that from a mindset, from an approach perspective, that's done wrong is we go into it saying, me, me, me. Here's what I want. This is what I need. Give me what I need. And oh, by the way, if you happen to get what you need along the way, awesome. That's the wrong approach. We need to be equally concerned about our partner's needs. And it is your obligation as a partner. It is your obligation to provide that value for that partner.
Once again, with me today is Mark Brigman. Mark's the CEO of Partnernomics and author, speaker, subject matter expert on the topic. Now, I'm going to close down by I did pursue paychecks. That didn't even go anywhere. You know, like, I mean, and that's one of the things that's a challenge. The bigger the company, the harder it is to find a decision maker. And, you know, people that are employees in companies don't give a shit the same way that principals or owners do. So, like, I mean, that's part of the challenge. You look at some of these big companies that look like amazing partners on the outside looking in. And then the thing is, you know, like I said, when you're dealing with an employee of another company and not a principal or an owner, or someone that has a vested interest in the success, I'm a realist. So like, that's just one more thing for that person to
You're do. Just another project.
The last thing that most people that are employees want is one more thing to do. So, you know, like, but that makes it challenging. So you got to, you know, it's swimming upstream and finding that. So, you know, one of the things that I think that the bigger the company, the longer it's going to take you to develop a partnership, the less the likelihood that you'll be successful. So, you know, try a few on for size, find some smaller folks. It's real. So there's this sweet spot that businesses, you know, a lot of you talk about how the mega company needs the startup, because startups are nimble. They are agile. Like a big company is like, when they want to do anything, it's the equivalent of like trying to turn a battleship around inside a swimming pool. It just doesn't happen quickly. And they're not nimble. Now, still in the battleship reference, the startup is that little two peg boat that could be anywhere on the board that's really hard to hit because it can navigate and move, and it's easier to get around. And, you know, that's also why the Navy has it, because one's big and powerful and boom, like the earth shakes when it fires. The other one's out doing a whole lot of different stuff. It has the ability to do things. So, you know, cut your teeth with look out. Now, people in that mid-level range, they are easy to get a hold of. A lot of startups are still big, but if you look for companies and businesses that are on the upswing, because once they are big, they got other shit going on. And like, that's not the greatest thing. It's like, I'll give you an example at Full Scale where we provide tech services. If I look at anything that talks about who just cashed a big funding round check, if I try to call those people the day that article come out, the phone's just ringing off the hook for 100 different reasons. I got to get to them like 2 months before that. And so, you know, that's where you plant your flag and that growth can occur. So sometimes, some of the easiest to form, the most flexible and the most beneficial relationships can happen in that early, you know, when, you know, that when the puppy dog years, you know, rather than, you know, that's another thing too, is that, you know, you use the puppy dog reference. Well, as an old dog lays around, it doesn't hunt. Or fat dogs don't hunt either, you know, and enough hunting references, but it's a good point, because some businesses also, as they evolve or grow, they don't care as much about the partnerships. They can, you know, it's easy to slide into a comfort zone. And that is, in my opinion, aren't the great partnerships, because you're going to find something going to work as hard for you. Now, one thing I do know is that you won't make any partnerships if you don't go out and try. Occasionally they come find you, but you know, be the hunter, not the prey. Get out there and look, contact someone like Mark. And you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, there are now some things that are more easily accessible are also really populated. So you're like one of like 500 things in there. Temper your expectations around that. But overall, done well and done correctly, you can, you know, put multiples onto your revenue pretty quickly and build a level of street cred for other future partnerships. You can parlay these into a lot of different things. But once again, just do it. take the Nike reference and just do it when it comes to looking for partners. Speaking of which, now I'm all fired up. I'm going to go find some of my own. So I'll let you know how that, I'll have you back and we'll discuss that, how that went for me in another episode, Mark. Is that
sound good? Yeah, Matt, that sounds great.
All right, man. I'll catch up with you next time.
Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.